Well, good morning, everybody. So I spent all day yesterday installing a backsplash, and so you guys are dismissed. I'm just kidding. So I've been told that my sermons tend to be self-deprecating. And as soon as I heard that, I had to look it up. Big word. So I found out it means you kind of make fun of yourself. You know, you put yourself down to speak and to comment. And so this morning, I was going to try something different. I was going to try and talk about one of my strengths. So we'll see how that goes. I actually wanted to talk about my time in the construction industry and some lessons that I've learned for my life that have surprisingly prepared me for and made me a better pastor to whatever degree I am a good pastor. And so I, in working construction, one of the hardest things that I found that needed to be done was not any of the physical labor that we had to do, but was in collecting a final payment from customers. And I think anybody that has worked construction is saying amen around the room right now. And that's probably true for a lot of different fields of work, but you know, I went to Bible school right out of high school. I went to Elam Bible Institute up in upstate New York, mostly because I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And thought, well, that would be a good place to get some direction, and so I went and graduated Bible school and promptly became a contractor. but that was a good representation to me of my focus in life and what I thought of myself as a teenager, as a child. I had very low self-esteem. I wasn't really good at anything that I did, and my brother made sure to make sure I knew that. He was always better than me at everything that we did, whether it was sports or music or just relating to people. He was the better guy, and he kept me in my place. and so going to Elam for me was something of, well, I'm not really good at anything. I'll just try this. And it kind of became, for me, a mentality like you've heard you tie up a baby elephant with a chain, and then when it's an adult elephant, you can tie it up with a thin string or the rope. As long as it has something around its ankle, it thinks it's tied up by a chain, it can't get away. And so you just kind of live life with that mentality of this is who you are. I was scrawny, I was skinny, I was little, and I wasn't strong. You know, there's lots of things going against me that I've just always kind of kept that mentality of small, of not imposing, unimposing. And so I went to Bible school, and then I started into construction. It was what was available to me. One of my class advisors that was up at Elam moved down here and started a construction company, Dale Stevens. And I worked for him for about 7 years and just learned the ins and outs of construction. And rose up through the ranks from just a general laborer earning minimum wage to project manager. From there, I moved on to other companies where I managed work and was in charge of jobs. I didn't do as much hands-on stuff, but had to manage, had to run work, had to be in charge of things. And one of the things that I began to get handed to me was the closer, was finishing out a job. And it wasn't the jobs that, you know, the person showed up in your office and they knew exactly what they wanted. They knew down to the finest detail of how they wanted the thing to look, and it was so easy to bid because you could just look up all the information and then just bid that project exactly as they saw it. You build exactly what they wanted. They hand you the check. The job is done. Everything is easy. Now, it was the ones that were difficult. Somehow I got handed, and it happened to me time and time again where a customer would be working with another project manager, and things would start to go south. The project would take a turn for the worst, and things would start to get messed up. And And let me tell you, if somebody's stuff is not going well, the last thing they want to do is hand you their money, right? I mean, how many of us in our own lives, if somebody's not giving you the service that you expected to receive, are you going to say, well, I'll just pay you anyway? And so I found myself with a hurdle that I had to overcome. It was amazing the number of times that I had to walk into a job and somehow convince a customer to pay us. It was not an easy job. It was not an easy job. It's not easy to bring somebody to a place of comfort that they still feel like they're going to be taken care of in order to make that payment. But somehow it was something that I learned to do. It was something that I think I had a natural gifting to do, something that my demeanor in being unimposing and being small in stature, I think, created a feeling of comfort, a feeling of trust. And it's something that I've become aware of. I didn't realize it at the time, but I think God was teaching me something through life. That as I started out as somebody that was low self-esteem, that didn't think highly of themselves, became somebody in a position where that was used to create connection, or that was used to somehow be a fruit, to somehow be useful. And so I find it interesting that now in working with teenagers and children, trying to convince somebody to do something that they don't want to do. It's definitely part of my job. I think we, as we're growing up, we get our own head on our shoulders, and we get our own initiative, we get our own desires behind our hearts. We begin to realize that we have our own ability to make decisions, and we start reaching for those things that, what can I have control of? Where can I be an authority? Where can I be the decision maker? And so that statement of working with teenagers and children and trying to convince them to do things that they may not want to do, I think comes from that category of learning how to be a leader, of learning how to take control of our lives. And if we're not given the opportunity to make decisions on things of day-to-day life, I think we start to take advantage of opportunities to make decisions on things that might hurt us. And so steering teenagers, steering children in a direction that their hearts, they just want to have control. They just want to be in charge. They just want to begin to make decisions for themselves. And so they'll go any direction that allows them to do that at times. And so steering somebody towards what you know is best, but convincing them of it without them knowing it, that's the trick. I think I need to take some lessons of this on my own in dealing with my own children, because I'm so much nicer to your students than I am to my own children. Man, I get angry in a heartbeat. But Jesus was teaching me something that I didn't know that I needed to learn in my early life, and as I started construction industry and working with customers and trying to guide them through the completion of their project, because the reality is, they don't want to pay you because they don't think you're going to finish, but if they don't pay you, you're not going to finish, right? Right? So those payments have got to come along the way the job goes in order for the materials to keep showing up, in order for the job to be completed. So having both parties come to the realization that both of us have got to trust one another for this thing to work out. And one of the things that I was learning was humility. Was meekness, was finding myself beneath the person that I was working for, because I immediately recognized in working construction, I did a lot of remodeling for customers, and so when you're remodeling somebody's home, this is their home. This is where they come at the end of the day to feel comfortable, to feel safe, And now the whole thing is in disarray. The whole thing is torn apart. Their place of comfort, their place of peace is in turmoil. And they don't even recognize most of the time that they're upset, not just because things aren't going the way they wanted it to, but because they don't have a safe environment. They find themselves locked in their bedrooms in the evening because their house is not a comfortable place. And I recognize when you mess with somebody's home, you mess with their heart. When you mess with somebody's secure place, their place of safety, you mess with their comfort. You mess with their ability to be at peace. And I think that that principle applies not just to our home, the physical, tangible home, but to our lives. When we begin to poke at people for the things that we see that aren't right about them, you're going to make them uncomfortable. And you're going to make it harder for them to accept that this is what they need. But how do they get to it? And so humility and meekness played a tremendous role in my ability to connect with people and walk them through finishing their job. Now, I will admit that that did not always work. That there are some personalities in this world that will not respect meekness. I worked on one job when I was working in commercial construction. I was supposed to be building a new restaurant for a customer. And, I went about it the same way I've done many other jobs and had success, and this guy did not like me. And what I came to find out was that he just wanted somebody that was going to command the room. He wanted somebody that was going to demand respect to run his project. To the point, he got so frustrated with me that he canceled the entire job, shut down the thing, and never opened a restaurant. I was a failure on my part big time. But so I think that was the few, you know, that was the limited. That was the not as many experiences for me. Most people that I encountered really did appreciate and were easier to work with when I considered myself less than them, when I was working on their place, when I was working in their business or in their home. I recognized that they are the authority in this place. And that I am a guest, that I'm here for a short amount of time, and that I'm going to move on, but they've got to look at it every day after I leave. I think you can apply some of those principles as I'm speaking to people's lives, as we try and connect with people, as we try and help people, as we try and make their lives better. Are you doing it in such a way that they can hear? So I started by saying that, you know, my early life experience was one of humility, of feeling less than, of not never feeling like I lived up to anybody else. And I think it certainly allowed me to be the person that I am today. It led me into the position that I find myself today and made me better at what I'm going to be. And so I love movies. I don't know if you know that about me, but I love movies. I don't have a lot of childhood memories, but I remember every movie I've ever seen. I don't understand how that works, but however my mind is, it connects to the emotion of watching movies, of what successful directors are able to accomplish. And I'm especially in love with the Marvel series in general. And so there's one particular scene that I laugh at every single time it comes on the screen. And I connect with a little bit, not necessarily with the specific problem that they're talking about, but just life in general. And it's two characters in a movie, Guardians of the Galaxy 2. And I don't recommend it. Please don't watch it. I do not give it my stamp of approval. but there's a particular scene that I found incredibly funny, and I wanted to share it with you this morning as I was speaking. And so there's a character named Drax and there's a character named Mantis that are talking. And both of them are either dense or ignorant or both. I don't know the best way to describe them, but they really only seem to know exactly what they've been told. And so Drax tells Mantis how incredibly ugly she is. And he says, "You're fortunate to be ugly, because when you're ugly, people love you, and you know that they love you for who you are. And she says, well, then I am very thankful to be ugly. And then I found out there's like an edited version, like a cutout version, where she then says, I feel so sorry for Gamora. Another character. So I just connected to that thought, you know, not necessarily because I think I'm ugly, because I'm not. Look at what I got, right? Ugly can't win that. But I think there's a heart behind that when you're low, when you're little, when you're less than, I think there's a trust to the connections that you make. There's a trust that you don't have to wonder what people think about you. And it's something that God used in me. And so, in walking through, trying to figure out who I am and how I work in this world, I came across the verse Romans 8:28, where God works all things together for the good of those who love him. And I think there's a heart and a mentality that God causes everything to happen to our lives. You know, that somehow that all the terrible things that I walked through as a child, all the things that made me feel like I was less than, that I was low, that I wasn't worth what other people were, to the point in middle school of being suicidal, that I had no friends, I was not well-liked, I didn't think highly of myself. And so do I look at that circumstance, or do I say, did God make that happen to me? Would God cause me to be bullied and made fun of and things like that? Why would God do that? But when I read that verse, I don't think that's what it's saying at all. I don't think that's his heart for us, that every single action that happens in our life is somehow God's hand causing it to be. I think that's a hard God to follow that makes all the terrible things happen in this world. But I think it is true that he works all things together for the good of those that love him. It's not that he makes everything good that happens to us. It's that he works these things together. He looks at the life of a teenage boy that's struggling in his self-identity and trying to figure out how he fits into this world and why he has no real talents in comparison to the people around him. And he says, I can use those things to create something good. I can use these circumstances. What a craftsman we serve that would take just parts and pieces, leftovers, and make something amazing. And I'm not lifting myself up, I'm amazing. But he turns it into something that is useful, something that is good, something that you can be proud of. I don't think he made me terrible at things. I don't think God was forming me in my mother's womb and said, you know what, Tyler's not going to be good at anything for at least 20 years. That's how we're going to work. I don't think that's how God made me. But I think he's watching. He's next to us, and he's with us. And he's a part of it. And he says, oh, I can use that. I can make that something that'll work for him. Oh, I can't wait to see his face when he realizes how this played a part. If you'll walk through it, if you'll get beyond it. But I will say that humility, timidity, meekness somehow became a strength in my life. I turned to one of the Beatitudes. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Now, when you go through your history books and they describe people that conquered the earth, does meekness come to mind? This verse to me seems on surface value, at face value, it seems a farce. It seems backwards. It seems like it doesn't connect. No. The people that conquer the earth, those are the ones that are strongest. Those are the ones with the military minds. Those are the ones that can force people into doing exactly what they wanted them to do in the first place. There are people on this earth that find success in doing it that way. But I think they always have to wonder about the relationships that they're in. The most powerful people on the earth that conquered the entire known world were probably looking over their shoulder at every moment of their life. And then we turn to a king. We turn to a man who had it all. He could look over the earth, sitting on his throne, and be at peace. And he decided to give up what he had. Why? What a beautiful song we sang this morning. I can see his heart 8 billion different ways. That's the why. He was willing to give it up to create connection. He was willing to give it up looking down on an earth of people that knew what they needed and were going to get it their own way, that knew how to take control, that knew how to be in charge, that knew how to run things and knew how things needed to be. And he came and he showed us a different way. When I think about Jesus and trying to be like him, think of the names that are accompanied by our God. What are those names like? He's our provider. He's our salvation. He's our comforter. He's our trust. He's our hope. Do those names, do they mean strength and power to you? When you look around the world, when you look around the environments that you find yourself in, are those the words that make you think of power and strength? Now, there are some of those words in there. He is a conqueror, right? He is victorious. He is all powerful. And he used his power at times to display his strength, to say, this is who I am and this is what I'm capable of. There were powerful moments in Jesus' life where you had to recognize in awe of who he is and what he's able to do. But the most powerful thing that all of us reflect on, the most powerful thing that he did, his greatest show of force, was to lay down his life. And not that anybody could take it. He said that not one man can take my life, but I'll give it to you. I'll lay it down. And this whole topic, this whole discussion came from a heart of my own of trying to decipher the difference between being a doormat and laying down your life. How is Jesus laying down his life different than being walked all over? And I think because one is taken advantage of and one is robbed and one gives it up. And where do you find yourself? When you feel like everything is being taken from you, that you have no control, when you have no power, you just want to fight back. But if you can lay down your life, if you can give up the strength that you have, because guys, we serve the mightiest of mighty. We serve the King of all kings. We are the children of the Most High. What strength do we not have access to? What do we not have the ability to take hold of because of who our God is? If you recognize that in your life, you can lay every bit of it down. You can put yourself beneath the people that you're serving because you have taken hold of his promises and they don't have it yet. Can you lay down the strength that you've been given? Can you give up the power that has been created and handed to you to serve someone else? So one of the things that Jesus said that always confused me, because he went on and on and on talking about how we need to honor our neighbor, and we need to respect even our enemy. We need to give of ourselves to those who are against us. And then he says, there's no greater love than that one man lay down his life for his friend. And I would confuse me for a while. Like, why this comparison? Why is so much of what Jesus talked about in his time on earth about loving our enemy and caring for those that don't care about us, but yet the greatest thing that we can do is to lay down our life for our friend? And it hit me. It's because he wants us to treat each and every one of them, our enemy and our closest confidant, like a friend. How has he treated us? If you're here this morning and you feel like you just want to be like Christ, what Christ are you considering as you think about that? Is it the one who is a show of force and power, transcendent on a mountain? Or is it the one that gave up everything for his friends? He counts us all as friends. And there is no greater love, there is no greater power in this world than to lay down strength to see someone else saved. We've all experienced hard times. We've all experienced rough things in our lives. We've all, every one of us, walked through things that hurt us to the core, that we felt robbed and taken advantage of. But I want to encourage everyone this morning. He wants to work those things together for your good. He wants to utilize those things to create a person of meekness, of timidity, of humility, to serve even the people that did it to them, to care for the ones that would attack you, to give honor and grace to even the least of these. Take advantage of the power that has been handed to every one of us. Take advantage of the relationship of a God who rules all, who can call down angels in just a moment's notice to save him from destruction, but would give it all up for the ones that would tear him down. Let's pray together this morning. God, we just reflect on you this morning. We recognize that your ways are not our ways, that your thoughts are not our thoughts, and that left to ourselves, we would find ourselves in destruction. But God, somehow you're weaving a tapestry of our lives. You're turning those moments that have hurt us, you're turning those instances that have created hurt and pain, and you're creating something beautiful out of it. Lord, use our lives. Help us to lay down our strengths. Help us to lay down in front of those that cannot do it for themselves. God, I pray that you would speak to the hearts and the lives of the people that are here this morning, the ones that want to be like you. God, we've come together this morning because we desire to know you. We want to know your heart, and we want to be like our God. Help us, Lord, to recognize the humility that you lead with. Help each and every one of us, Lord, to walk in a path that you walked in, to carry the cross and the burden of salvation, of comfort and care, of even healing for the ones that we encounter. God, go with us this morning. Be with us. Walk with us and continue to weave that tapestry in our lives, that we might be something beautiful for someone else to behold. It's in Jesus' precious name we pray this morning. Amen.